Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 123. We are discussing the Betfred British Masters on the European Tour and the 3M Open on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert Paul Williams and podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Barry, I've got to ask you before we move on. Have you recovered from Sunday night?
Do you know what? I was philosophical going into it. So I didn't actually call this on the pod last week. The guy, one of the combos of odds and, you know, recent form and course form in Europe was Joel Stalter, who I put a small bet on each way. And then I popped him into some each-way doubles to try get the transatlantic double.
Yeah.
And two of the guys I had running were Day and left and running over there were Day and Finau. So, you know, from I had two full rounds to sweat, and everything was looking rosy through 47 holes for Finau, and then the self-destruct button got hit, and it hit repeatedly for the next. The next 25 holes, he went, my God, what was he, 10 over par or something like that?
I heard 12.
Okay, thanks. That helps even more.
He was three ahead at one point, wasn't he? He had a three shot.
Yeah. He was cruising. Everything looked fine, and a little mistake happened, and then he decided to, you know, push the go button to try attack that course, and it just wasn't the time to do it, you know? Mm.
That course wasn't for attacking, was it?
No.
Jesus.
No, it was not at all.
It was desperately hit the middle of the green and get out of there with two putts.
Take the two putts and
yeah. And so at one stage on Sunday, I think Finau was what might have been outside the places to get the each way return on the double. And I had him on a single as well, each way. So, I mean, by that stage of the event, I was just begging for himself and Day to get into the places and just get some money back. And thankfully they did. And so, yeah, all in all, it was actually a very good week. Yeah.
Profitable week. I was thinking this on my morning cycle today. Is it worse to have no one in the mix on Sunday, which I'm getting used to, or is it worse to have a player that's leading and then pretty much ends up with very little in return and just collapses? I'm just talking from an emotional roller coaster perspective. And I got to the final this in my mind, the final kind of angle was, yeah, well, it'd be far better to have someone in the mix. And actually, you got some nice returns out of it anyway, because he did have the decency to get an each way place for him.
No, it was great. I mean, I think, to quote a cliche, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. So it's better to have a guy in the mix and that bomb. I mean, at least you get that chance of it happening versus, you know, the weeks where any bets I have tank and you're just watching golf on Sunday with no interest, they're actually good as well, because you don't have any, you're not cheering for anybody in particular. You're not rooting against anyone, which I hate doing. Because you don't want to see anybody failing. So, yeah, I'd rather have golfers in the mix every week and just missing it and still getting those each-way places, because that keeps the balance and the betting accounts ticking over nicely and lets you have another full clip for the next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Visit Golf Betting System with betting previews containing tips, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor model, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Are you going to start listing your bets on there, Barry, so that your followers can see exactly who you're betting while you're going through this successful stage? Become an Irish Jeff Feinberg. Go on, go for it, Barry.
Oh my God, that's a huge name to live up to.
Well, you should tweet out who you're backing, because at the end of the day, all of the stuff Paul and I back goes on the Golf Betting System website, but people don't get a view of who you're backing unless they clearly
listen to this
podcast. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm trying to drive traffic to the podcast, you know, by not tweeting, so they have to come here to listen to them.
There's no, what when you tweet it out, just say listen to the podcast for full reasoning. There you go.
Paulie, this should be part of the marketing meeting, not the podcast, Steve. But anyway,
Paul is at Golf Betting, and I'm at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. What are we up to, Paul, on the Facebook group? Golf Betting System
Nearly 5,400. There's a lot. We've had a lot of people come through over the last couple of weeks, which is great. Yep. So if you're on Facebook, pop along, join in the fun. There's a lot of conversation, a lot of constructive conversation actually on there, which is really good.
We also have the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel. It never used to be called that. It used to be called the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, but now it's the Steve Bamford Golf channel because we had to reopen a new one. But come to the Steve Bamford Golf channel. I put a 3M Open video up last night, actually, and they're doing more and more views. Right, please take time. I say this every week, but it's so important. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It's the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers. Now, a lot of you have been doing this recently, and we really, really appreciate it. From an Apple iTunes perspective, the amount of reviews you get is absolutely critical in terms of their charts and their listings and where you get visibility. So please keep the reviews coming. I always read them at the start of every show. So here's one. The title is Outstanding 5 Stars. The highlight of my week is tipping a couple of players for the golf over the weekend. My week's just got a whole lot better with these awesome podcasts. They are incredibly informative, interesting and humorous. Golf betting is a tough gig, but just got a little easier. Keep up the great work. That is from Dave Albany, and he is in the United Kingdom. Thank you for that, David.
Thank you, Dave. That's some very nice words there. And I'm glad you're enjoying your golf punting. And that's the key, isn't it? If you're having fun while you're doing it as well. It's all part of the game.
Never stake what you can't afford. Mm. Now, let's talk last week. Now, Barry, you actually backed Stalter, yes? He's a French guy, yeah?
Yep.
You actually backed a French player that showed some balls in a final round, and that is a very rare occurrence. So well done for that.
It was awesome. And full disclosure, it was nothing deeper than matching up his previous week, what he did the previous week with what his result was the year before. And then, you know, looking at the odds and going, oh, that's kind of worth a little punt. So the little punt went on and it worked out. And, you know, it's amazing how golf betting can turn out to be so simple sometimes. Other times you can put in hours of research and end up with a whole roster of miscuts.
Yep.
You know, so it's just so messed up. But he was super impressive, really was. I was just tracking it on the app. It was horrible not being able to watch it, but amazing results. And you always expect these long shots to fail when they're, you know, really close to the winning line. And fair play to him, he didn't.
Yeah, no, he was really good. And it was interesting because we had Robin C.O. Segrist, who I'd put up the week before, who dived into what looked like was going to be an unassailable lead, didn't he, going into the final day? But
And collapsed.
Yeah, just gradually whittled away his lead and Stalter hung around. He didn't have to do anything spectacular on the final day.
They've got a very impressive crop of youngsters, the French, haven't they?
Yeah, there's some good players coming through. It's always difficult to gauge how good they are relative to the rest of the field. I mean, I had John Catlin, who is an American, who was he's in a great spot at the halfway point, shot 66-66, and I thought I was going to get a decent run out of him, but he kind of fell away. And for me, he was one of the more, you know, should have been one of the more assured and capable players of sticking around at the weekend. But you never quite know at that kind of level, do you, how the players are going to react. So, but yes, interesting effort from Stalter. Interesting to see how he goes and progresses from here.
I don't know if they'll add that course to a European Tour schedule when we ever get back to a sort of post-COVID kind of situation, but by God, that was a picturesque golf course.
Yeah, it's been on the Challenge Tour for the last couple of years. It looks fantastic, doesn't it? It really does look like a gem. So,
Absolutely.
They may well keep some of the, depending what how it pans out next year, they may well keep some of these co-sanctioned European and Challenge Tour events going, and that'd be a great one to do. Because clearly it wasn't a particular pushover, was it? You know, given it was only a 6,400-yard track the winning score 14 under. They're not running away with it. They're not absolutely taking it to pieces. It's got to be some teeth in it.
As Jack Nicklaus said in the television cast on Sunday night, he said, "My par threes are never long, but they're tough. They're very, very... They sort the men out from the boys. It doesn't have to be a lengthy golf course to be a challenging golf course." That's a good segue into the memorial. There's quite a lot of heat for Jack Nicklaus this week in terms of how he let the course go. At the end of the day, it turned into a major style test, and he let the greens just... He did what they said they were going to do. They water in the rough. The rough was higher. The fairways were firm and fast because it hadn't rained in Columbus. And they weren't watering the greens, or they were giving them the bare minimum. And don't forget, they're ripping that golf course up now, so they actually started ripping it up during the during the telecast, didn't they? So it's all good. So he didn't care less if the greens got as firm as fast as they did, because they were all getting ripped up.
But it had to be significantly different to the work day, didn't it? To make it sensible, to make the decision to play two consecutive events on the same track, it had to be significantly different. And it was, wasn't it? Just watching the difference from one week to the next. I know they tucked the pin, some of those pin positions were incredible, weren't they? But it shows you that the difference that can be made with a little bit of wind, firmer greens, and some tough pin positions can turn it into a proper test kind of.
It was awesome. I loved watching it because it's something we see so rarely. You know, usually it's the heavily watered greens, the fairways not running out, and it just was so much more intrigue watching guys hitting irons off tees on long par fours and three woods and trying to shape the ball and, you know, taking on the risk of cutting corners but running out on the far side of the fairway then. And it was just fascinating and a very different style of golf to watch than what we usually are offered up each week. And, you know, it showed, you know, a lot of guys really struggled and, you know, made me question their credentials in the future for tough events. You know, we were all on Danny Willett, and, you know, you'd almost double down your bet on him, you know, handling tough conditions on the Sunday, and that did not go well. I mean, I don't know if
I thought it playing to his hands. It reminded me so much of his Masters win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
those
mm-hmm.
conditions.
Maybe it was just a bad grouping, himself and Finau. They just got off to a bad start, and that kind of just creates an atmosphere in the group, and you feel like you can't escape that battle that you're in to try play well or score well or even just score level. And they just kind of went down, you know, got spun around the whirlpool and off they went. But there was a lot of big names got taken apart. And I guess when somebody's so far out in front and the conditions are tough, you know, maybe you relax a little bit in your attitude and you're like, oh, whatever happens, happens, you know, we'll just... I don't know, maybe you're not super focused at that stage because it's so tough.
I don't know, but Danny's not at that point where he can just... It's win or bust. There's, you know, a good, strong finish in that kind of field, in that kind of company, has got to be positive for his morale, if not for his bank balance.
Yeah. Sometimes he just gets, you know, spun around and spat out, and that was it. Maybe just chalk it up, you know, chalk it as a one-off for these guys that we had pegged as, like, able to battle it out, and they just, you know, it happens to the best of them. So, there was a couple of players that really battled through well. I mean, Xander started the tournament awfully, but finished very well. He's definitely one to keep, I have my eye on now in the coming coming few weeks.
I think he's going to be a factor next week, and certainly the PGA over in San Francisco, especially on the basis of California kid.
Yeah,
playing some really nice golf, isn't he, Xander, under the surface?
Yeah.
What do we think to John Rahm being world number one then?
Amazing. Yeah. What a guy to, what a guy to watch when he's in full flow. Yeah.
Very impressive. Very impressive indeed. You see that picture with him as a youngster, as a 13-year-old, having his shirt signed by Henrik Stenson, which came out of the woodwork.
Yeah, it was very good. Stenson has always just nails it and says he wants it, you know, to get his shirt signed next week. So, I mean, this tweet's been flying around with his stats. You know, his first 100 events, he's at 10 wins, 24 top threes, 37 top fives, and 50 top tens. So half the time he's played, he's top 10. I mean, is he should have been an auto bet for us the whole way along.
Oh, mate, I can't believe. Yeah, when I actually just reviewed his stats from the workday and what he'd done, it was exactly the model that had got me the two wins with Cantlay and also with DeChambeau the year before. And I just totally missed him. And actually, at that price point, that's the biggest price you've seen on Rahm. And we keep having this conversation now about Rory. You know, 14-1 last week, Rory. You might find now at the WGC next week, he's a little bit of 16-1 out there on Rory. The win is coming for Rory. We don't know when. And that price just kept getting bigger and bigger on Rahm because he hadn't been that impressive since the restart. And then I think it was the last two rounds at the workday, all of a sudden he was firing off the tees, the approach game was back. And that's been his weakness, the irons. Mm. And he just carried that forward, didn't he? And this narrative that John Rahm is a soft golf course bully, it doesn't really pan out when you look at his record. Do you remember when he won his first PGA of Tour event at Torrey Pines? The greens that week were like glass at Torrey Pines. It was as tough as you like, that golf course. And he was in a battle, I remember, with Tony Finau at that point. And then you had Finau again, and you had John Rahm at Memorial last week. So there's something in there about a tough, fast golf course suits players like Rahm and Finau, until Finau had his mental meltdown because he was three shots clear. But you see where I'm heading.
Well, perhaps it's a state of mind thing with John Rahm, because we have seen him in tougher tests and not have the patience to be able to put
at US Open. Yeah,
yeah, to put and that was US Open tough, wasn't it? You know, we've seen him in those situations where he's just not had the patience to stick around for four rounds, and sometimes to not even stick around for two rounds. And perhaps that's part of the maturity. You know, we've talked about it a number of times, and we've all seen and identified the potential of John Rahm, and, you know, clearly that's realised he's the world number one right now, and quite rightly too. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, whether that means he's always going to perform well on tougher tests, we shall see. I think it's probably more down to a state of mind with him. And if he's relaxed and feeling positive in his approach to his golf at that time, then it's going to be very tough to stop, isn't it?
We were communicating, weren't we, Barry, during the final round? And the thing with Rahm was, front nine, he was exceptional. And then all of a sudden, he lashed it out of bounds on the par five. I think the fact was, I'm taking nothing away from him, because clearly he was the best player by a million miles, but he had no one chasing him down. I mean, Ryan Palmer, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Matt Wallace, Jason. It's not exactly striking fear into you, is it? Mackenzie Hughes, well, Henrik Norlander.
Not when they're that far behind, no.
Now, if you'd have had, and we'll, you can always have this conversation over a pint of beer, if he'd have had a Rory McIlroy or, you know, a Brooks Koepka in full flight, or Xander head-to-head going down the back nine, things might have been different. But let's give the guy credit. Rahm, world number one. He took the world number one on merit. That was weighing on his shoulders, and he got the job done, didn't he? And that world number one is going to be a scenario now where we can have different world number ones. I mean, Webb Simpson could have become world number one if he'd have won this week. It's so close at the top.
I think the thing about Sunday was, there was no possibility of chasing somebody down unless you had that miracle match of the guy who was four shots back shooting like the 68 that Matt Fitzpatrick shot. So that would have been Palmer or Finau. And that would have been shooting the best score of the day in the most highly visible and pressurized grouping as well. You know, the last two groups. So it was always going to be a case of his to lose. And, you know, he got to it like the eight shot lead, and that just, you know, it's comfortable and you can make mistakes, and
Yeah.
You know, he had his little outburst after he lost that tee shot on the par five, but you know, I'm sure the caddy had a word and said, "What are you doing? Just chill out here. We're grand. Don't worry about it." And you know, it was all fine in the end. I mean, look, I think we need to have a little word about the rules thing. Was a bit crazy, you know, the ball moving.
Yeah.
Again, like the PGA Tour flexing their muscles on, you know, showing how well they can apply the rules, but in a completely meaningless manner at the end of the day, because they waited until he was finished his round, and he was only told by, you know, done through the TV interview, which I thought was brilliant TV, actually, to see his reaction. Mm-hmm. But again, they got away with it. It reminded me of the Dustin Johnson penalty at Oakmont.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. They can apply it after the event. They can tick the box and say, yeah, we've upheld the rules. But I mean, what do they do in a situation where he's one shot clear or two shots clear on the 18th?
Yeah.
They have to tell him.
Yeah.
So why do they make these judgments to hang on until after the event to tell somebody about these penalties when they could clearly get the information out sooner? I mean, and like, the only way you kind of see that golf ball moving is when it's blown up on the screen. So it's and the camera's moving at the same time. And how can you tell if a ball's moved from like 6 foot tall, you know, or versus an oscillation? So
it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, as an amateur, it wouldn't even cross your mind that that's a penalty.
No, but how can you? The perception of whether that ball moves or not is just, it's so hard to tell from really close up. Let alone from like 6 foot tall, and he might just be grounding the club behind the ball, almost like you ground the club, your putter behind the ball, but you're looking at the target as well as it happens. So it could easily happen like that. Just a funky one, and look, move on, you know. But again, we're back to this like, you know, hyper slow motion, big blown up shots just to find this one little thing.
Yeah, it's not the game, is it? And you're right. At some point, it's going to materially matter to an event coming down the stretch, and then the decision's got to be made as to how that's approached. Because if that turns a one shot victory into a one shot defeat post the event, it's not acceptable, is it? It's got to be a better way to do things, I think.
No, and you're into this grey area then of, like, you know, gauging the player's intent. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, and we roll back then to the Patrick Reed moving the sands thing, and then the intent, or people laying a 3 wood down behind a ball in the rough to only just go for it with a wedge. Then, you know, I don't know. More clarity needed on golf rules. What a surprise!
For new listeners, golf is just a crazy day, a game, work day open. Ryan Palmer shot 77-81 and was virtually last, and then last week he finished second and earned himself $1.013 million by finishing second to John Rahm.
And
crazy game, golf.
And second in a very, very, very strong field.
Yeah. You won't get that on a strokes gained model, will you? Ryan Palmer finishing second. Right.
Quickly, before you go, one other person, I mean, aside from Matt Fitzpatrick and Matt Wallace, who both did extremely well, I thought. Siwoo Kim caught my eye, putting well again. When's the next time? Because we want him on Bermuda Green, Steve, don't we? So is it the Wyndham? Yeah. Is it the next chance?
You should have pre-warned me.
I'm
pretty certain he doesn't play. I'm desperately looking. I'm pretty certain he doesn't play next week at the WGC, which is on Bermuda Green.
Yeah.
True?
Yeah.
I can't see for the life of me how he's qualified for that.
They've opened that up, though, haven't they? The next ranked players if they don't fill it up from the previous qualifying criteria.
I've not gone through a full field yet. I'm thinking
he has at the moment. He's only qualified for the PGA and for the Masters, so he's not in the WGC. But of course, you know he's going to play the Wyndham.
Yeah.
And I said a few weeks ago, because I tipped him up, didn't I, on Bermuda last time they played, and I said, you know, this is a big week for Siwoo. Because he's outside the top 125 in the FedEx Cup, and he's only got a couple of Bermuda Green tournaments left. He then, of course, missed the cut. But since then, he's actually worked out that he's in a bit of trouble, and he's two top 20s on the trot. So, Wyndham Championship, he'll be playing that, and that is where he could fire. But clearly the bookmakers will know that. So you could do with a missed cut this week, really, from Siwoo.
Yeah. keep him slightly below the radar. Yeah, one to watch anyway. I thought that was interesting
to see.
To see that he was putting well again.
Right, British Masters, take it away, Bob.
Yeah, let's crack on. We're 25 minutes in, so we need to rattle through this in a 3M relatively quickly.
It won't take long in America, believe me.
British Masters, it's one of these events that's been around for donkey's years, and it came back to the 40s originally. Although only just been resurrected in the last few years. Great to have it back, though, on the tour. It's one of those events which I look forward to very much. Sky Sports removed their sponsorship, didn't they? Which means that Betfred have stepped into the sponsors position, which is interesting for this week for punters, because Betfred have gone a massive 10 places each way at a fifth of the odds for all customers. If you aren't a Betfred customer, we have got a deal on the site, which is on my preview, so you can take a click through to that page and you'll find the deal, which is for UK customers, bet 10, get 30 and 30 free spins for new UK customers. Full terms and conditions are on that page. But Betfred 10 each way, 150 odds, is a cracking deal, since the next best actually is 7 places this week and they've got some decent prices as well. Anyway, going back to the event itself, since the event restarted back in 2015, we've had some decent winners, actually. Matt Fitzpatrick at 33-1 at Woburn for the event that rekindled this British Masters. 2016 was Alex Noren, who was playing some cracking golf at the time. 18-1 he won at the Grove over in Hertfordshire. 2017 was Paul Dunn here at Close House, 66-1. Eddie Pepperell won at Walton Heath in 2018 at 30-1. And last year was Marcus Kinholt at 175-1.
At Hillside. That was at Southport, wasn't it?
Yeah, Hillside. Yeah.
Hillside, Southport, yeah.
That's right. He came off the back of 4 consecutive missed cuts. So if you managed to pluck him out at 175-1, then very well done last year. But we're back this year. It does move around this event. So bear that in mind when you're looking at the event stats for this week. We're back to the 2017 venue where Paul Dunn won at Close House, with Lee Westwood once again the tournament host, as he was that particular year as well. A bit different though this year, because previously that was the Sky Sports sponsored event, and clearly they had lots of fans. There were lots of free tickets available as well. So I think they had something like 70,000 fans in attendance for that particular event back in 2017, and clearly there's going to be none this time because of the COVID world that we're currently living in, which is a shame. It's been a tough job for Westwood, to be fair, you know, given the climate that we're operating in, given the fact there's a WGC next week in America, there's a major coming up in America the week after. So rounding up players for this week hasn't been easy, but he still managed to get a few names in there. I mean, he heads the betting himself around 10-1, Lee Westwood, and you can see his chances fairly obvious. Thomas Detry, 14-1. Eddie Pepperell, 28-1. Then you've got the likes of Ryan Fox, Ross Fisher, Marcus Kinholt defending, Jordan Smith, all 33-1. Adrian Nouse, who's been heavily backed over the last day or so. Mikko Kahonen and Andy Sullivan, 35-1. And it's 40-1, bar those players that I've just named. So once you've gone past the first couple, it does open out quite considerably. Close House, we're playing the Colt Course, which was named after Harry Colt himself. It's a 6,872-yard par 71 this time. So clearly, they've changed some routing by the looks of it from when we were here 3 years ago. It ended up on a par 3 when we played in 2017 and was a par 70, and they've changed it. It ends in a par 4, tough par 4 this time around. So it looks like we're playing the same stretch of land. They've just rejigged it a little bit. They've changed the par, so there's an extra par 5 in there this time around. But for all intents and purposes, we're still playing materially the same track. It's Parkland style. It's generally quite exposed, although there are a few tree-lined holes, but generally it's quite wide. Fairways are generous. I've noted it down as a second shot course in my notes. A lot of elevation changes, contoured greens, and the greens really are part of the equation here. They are. There's lots of slopes and lumps and bumps in them. They can't get them too quick. They have to limit them to about 11 on the stimp, and they are USGA standard bent grass greens, but relatively slow, particularly if there's a bit of a bit of moisture in the air, which we will get this week by the looks of it. Mid-60s Fahrenheit in terms of the temperature. Sunshine interspersed with drizzle for the 4 days. 10 to 15 mile an hour wind, pretty consistent. Maybe laid down a little bit on the Friday, but Thursday, Wednesday, Saturday looks like there could be a wind of a circa 10 to 15 mile an hour. So nothing too massive, but it'll just keep the players honest, I think. Looking back at 2017, clearly that's the event that's going to give us the biggest correlation for this week's task. Paul Dunn won at 20 under. He shot, you may remember, he shot 61 on the Sunday to win his first title, holding off Rory McIlroy into second place by 3 shots. He chipped in on the final hole, that par 3, to secure his title, which was great to see. I've got a lot of time for Dunn. I've backed him quite a lot in the past. I backed him quite a lot that year, actually, and then contrived to miss him that particular week at 66-1, which is, I know we all have our own individual misses that you go down and you think, well, how the hell did I not back that player that particular week and pulled up?
Every week, mate.
Yeah, you can. Hindsight's great, isn't it? Hindsight's great, and you can pick the bones out of most weeks. But whenever I look back at Paul Dunn, knowing that I backed him maybe 5-6 times that year, and he was arriving on the back of 3 top 14 finishes, going to a track that no one else had played competitively for, you know, in terms of this event for this event, and 66-1, and I didn't put him up, didn't back him. I just still incredulous that I got to that point. Anyway, he won it on the strength of his short game primarily. He was first for scrambling that week, 4 for putting. McIlroy, we know what McIlroy's game's going to be about. It's about to tee to green, excellent. And clearly they play two different styles of game. But for me, it's more geared towards a player like Dunn, with its wider fairways, with its challenges, its slopes, its runoff areas around the greens. I think you need to have a little bit of imagination. I think you need to have a good scrambling game. I think you need to be a decent putter. I think you need to be able to putt from distance, and I think you need to be able to avoid 3 putts. They're all of the kind of elements that I think are important for this particular track. And that's Paul Dunn down to a tee. I mean, he's pretty flagrant from off the tee, as we know, but his wedge game is incredible when he's on form, and his short game putting is up there with some of the very best. So although we've only got that one particular year to dig into, that for me is the kind of person, the kind of player that we're looking for. Might be a slightly different dynamic this year, I guess, with no public to stop any wayward shots in terms of balls hitting into the crowd, and certainly not to trample down any rough. So there may be a slight more premium on accuracy, but we should see about that. Again, for me, more down to a player's short game. Approaches in wedges and bent grass green putting as well, which is going to be fairly critical, I think. I'll rattle through my 5 selections for this event, and then we'll see if you guys have got anything to add to that in the interest of time. I've swerved the top of the market. I mean, Westy, and you can make a really good case for Westy, couldn't you? 10-1, he knows the course like the back of his hand. He's clearly much fitter, and I think I saw him in the news this morning. He's lost 2 stone over the lockdown period. He does look good for a man approaching his 50s. He's done well, Westy. However, he hosted here in 2017. He was second going into the weekend and drifted down to 15th. I just wonder whether, if there's any issues, any COVID-related challenges this week, whether that will be anything that will impact him, and whether the fact that he is the tournament host, whether there's 70,000 people we're watching or not, there's got to be an element of it's got to be a factor that you've got to build into it at the price, 10-1. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him go and win, but I can't be having him at that price. Thomas Detchery as well, again, we could argue about the fact that he's one of the most likely winners in waiting, but at 14, 16-1, there's a little bit about Detchery out there. I can't have him at that price, unfortunately. I've gone a bit further down. I've started with Pablo Larrazabal as my headline this week. He shot 4 rounds here in the 60s back in 2017. He finished in 26th place overall. And he was coming into that event in particularly poor form. I think he missed four of his previous five cuts, and his best finish was something like 65th in the last 3 months heading up to that. So for him to improve dramatically at this track 3 years ago was a positive for him. And it's these kind of short, wide tracks that are ideal for him. I mean, he can putt bent. I mean, we've seen that quite recently. He won at Leopard Creek back in December. And more recently, before lockdown, 13th in Saudi, 7th in Qatar. He led the putting both times on the Paspalum and then the Bermuda Greens of those particular tracks. But he can definitely putt bent grass as well. He shot the third round 63 in Qatar before lockdown as well to show that he was in some decent nick. A lot of these players, the ones that haven't played in Austria, are coming here after 3-4 months off, aren't they? And it's interesting to note with Pablo that 3 of his last 4 wins have come after at least 3 weeks off of competitive golf. And also included in that was when he won in Abu Dhabi back in 2014, which was his first start of the year. And again, that had been mid-January, and his previous start was the start of December. So that was a good 6-week, 7-week stretch where he hadn't played any competitive golf. So Pablo can get himself up for a restart by the looks of his history. And he was playing some nice stuff before the break. So I've taken 45-1. I've taken that with Betfred at 10 each way, which gives us a lot of chances to get a player into the mix and into the paying places this week. I backed him up with Guido Migliozzi, who, as in, to be fair, he hasn't quite lived up to his 2019 success so far in 2020, although clearly, like everyone else, he's had his chances curtailed by the virus. Interesting, though, we saw some signs before the break that his game was coming around again. He was fourth in Oman before lockdown, which is a much improved performance. He led after the first day. He was sixth for scrambling that particular week as well. If you look at his 2 wins last year, he won the Magical Kenya Open, which was a 6,900-yard track, par 71 with bent grass greens. He won the Belgian Knockout, which was a 6,900-yard par 71 with bent grass greens. This week we're playing a 6,900-yard par 71 with bent grass greens. Now, that could be a complete coincidence, or we may have just found the magic bullet for Guido Migliozzi in terms of the course setup that he absolutely loves. And for me, that's enough correlation to take a chance on a player that we know is well capable of winning. And at 50-1, I'll take the chance on him. He didn't play in 2017. He was still in the Alps Tour at the time. But I think he's won 3 or 4 times on the Alps Tour as well over his short career to date. So there's plenty to like about a player like Guido, whose bag packed full of potential, in my view. Three players to back those 2 top tips up with. Chris Paisley, 60-1. And if we're looking for a player with a short game, a decent short game, then Paisley's got to make the shortest for me. And listen to these stats. 6th for strokes game putting for the season. 6th for scrambling. 3rd for sand saves. 5th for 3 putt avoidance. 1st for putts per round. His short game has been absolutely on point so far in 2020. He won his maiden pro title at the English Challenge back in 2012 for a little bit of English form. When he won the South African Open, which was his maiden European Tour title, that was the first event of the year after Christmas for him. So again, like Pablo, another player who has proven that he can get himself up for the challenge after a layoff. Now, he missed the cut here in 2017. And this is very much a home game for Chris Paisley. He lives relatively local. And at that time, he had friends, family, lots of people watching him. Clearly, players can keep pressure on their own shoulders in that kind of scenario. And there won't be any such pressure this week because there'll be no one out there watching him other than the other players in his group and the officials and caddies. So that may well shift the balance, and I expect him to make a far better fist of it this time around. Particularly seeing as we saw him play well before the break, 7th in Qatar in his last start, and his short game was absolutely on point that week. Richie Ramsey is another one I backed. I backed him at 70-1. He's been backed by all and sundry, it would seem. So if you fancy a bit of Richie Ramsey, then do make your bet sooner rather than later. And I should make a point at this stage, this event starts on Wednesday as per last week, so that's tomorrow. in relation to this podcast. So don't sit on your decisions too long. Richie Ramsey's more conventional pick, really. He was eighth here in 2017. Shorter tracks suited him. He won in Cran-sur-Cier. He won in Morocco when it was played in that shorter track around the King's Castle. Normally, he's a strong tee to green merchant, but his short games look really good recently. Top 11 for scrambling on five of his last 11 starts, which is good for Richie. Best putting performance of the year for him was in Qatar before lockdown. And could he be one of these players who's spurred on by the Mark Warren success story that we saw a couple of weeks back in Austria? Yeah, I think Richie fits that same kind of bill. He's not won since 2015, I think, plucking off the top of my head. So he could be another who's keen to get that W sooner rather than later. And finally, my fifth of five is Sam Horsfield, 60-1. And I guess, like Detry, there's a number of players that you could say are very capable of breaking through on the European Tour. I mean, this guy's finished second, third, fourth and fifth on tour so far. I think it's only 23, Sam Horsfield. That fifth was at Walton Heath in this particular event a couple of years back. More recently, 12th in Abu Dhabi, 7th at the Vic Open this year. You know, there's another that's had results on short, wide, bent grass green tracks, and I think this would suit him quite nicely. For the year, 22nd for scrambling, 21st for sand safe, 7th for three-putt avoidance as well. Again, they're the kind of metrics I'm looking for this week. What really caught my eye, like Tony Finau and Barry mentioned last week, that Finau had shot 59 in practice during lockdown, and then went out and arguably should have made a much stronger fist of his effort last week and over the last round and a half or so. Similar to Finau, Sam Horsfield shot 59 in practice a few weeks back. That was actually on a par 73, which is an even bigger feat in my view. I mean, he shot 10 birdies and 2 eagles, 6 pars, to shoot 59 on a par 73, which takes some doing in my view. So the guy's clearly playing some good golf. And yeah, happy to take him on at 60-1 again with Betfred. So I've actually placed 4 of my 5 bets with those 10 place terms. Paisley, Horsfield, Larrathabelle and Guido were all placed with Betfred 10 each way, a fifth of the odds. So that's my 5. Any thoughts from you guys? Anyone jump off the page?
Barry?
I found it hard to kind of really get deep into having many players on a list this week. I have Richie Ramsey as well. Happily on him early doors yesterday to get a decent price. And so, look, you already feel like you're winning when you see somebody's price tumbling. The problem is usually when you get these big runs on players where everybody's on them, inevitably these things don't really pan out too well. So, but that's not to say I'm not rooting hard for him to do it, because he's a really, really good guy to listen to. So look, let's see. Everything, you know, good player. Went well here the last time in 2017. So fingers crossed. I mean, another couple I'm kind of keeping an eye on would be Adri Arnaus and Connor Syme as well. So I don't know if I'll do them outright. I'll figure it out.
Arnaus has been really popular. He's, you know, clearly showed a good form last week. And here's another one like Guido, who's you know, packed full of potential and could win a lot of events at this kind of level. So I can see the logic with him, definitely.
Yeah, he's a very good player. So yeah, those are the ones that kind of caught my eye. Like what you're saying about a few years there, but I don't know. It feels a bit of an unknown-ish week because it's the first one back in the UK. Even though some guys have been playing abroad, something's kind of putting me off going a bit big and deep on this one. Just see what happens and maybe look into next week a bit more.
Yeah, could be a watching brief. Yeah, well, we've got it's the first of these 6 UK swing events, so we're going to see a lot of the same players over the course of the next 6 weeks who are residing in this European Tour bubble. So we're going to get a good feel as we go through these events as to who's playing some good golf and who's struggling with the either the situation or with the game at the moment. So interesting to see.
That leaderboard from 2017 at Close House, Paul Dunn, Rory McIlroy, Robert Carlson, top three. It just shouted to me, St Andrews. St Andrews, big star. Now, if I remember correctly, Paul Dunn, did he lead the Open in 2015 as an amateur?
Yeah. He drifted down to 30th or so at the end, but he did really well for 3 rounds, didn't he?
He's also got a top seven there in the Dunhill. You've got Robert Carlson, who's won the Dunhill Links in 2008, and you've got Rory McIlroy. I've been busy while you've been talking. He's got 3 seconds and two-thirds at St Andrews. So I just think St Andrews. So Richie Ramsay must back for me. Absolutely. We're all on board. The whole punting world's on board. Fourth and second at St Andrews at the Dunhill Links, 2008 and 2014. Another player that I think is playing some really good golf, kind of under the radar, but and we found this in the States. You remember Daniel Berger?
Yeah.
One at Colonial. Big gap between tournaments. But this particular guy, I'm thinking, sixth in Abu Dhabi, sixth at Saudi, and 10th at the Oman Open. Plays well in the UK, and his St Andrews record is top-notch. 2008 second, 2016, 2017 runner-up, all at the Links, Dunhill Links. Ross Fisher. So I'll have a bit of Ross Fisher at 33-1. And there's one player that I made a mental note of, Callum Hill. Now, do you remember when we were in the depths of COVID and there was no golf and everyone got excited about the Outlaw Tour over in Arizona?
Yeah.
Well, Callum Hill won, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you remember he won that first event? I think it was the first one he won, or he might have won the second one. And I'm just seeing Callum Hill at 125-1.
Well, it's interesting with Hill because he would have been the defending champion last week at the UM Bank Open, but chose not to play it so that he could be prepared for this week. So that may tell you, kind of give you an indication as to where he thinks his game should be being pitched going forward. So
I did notice that. And that to me was a tree line short kind of course that might have a bit of, it had undulation in it as well, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is far, far wider, but even so, it's an interesting decision for him to make to not effectively go there and defend his challenge tour title and to focus on this particular week. So,
Barry, do you know anything about Calgorm Resort and Spa in Northern Ireland? Is that something that you've come across, of course?
Galgorm.
Yeah, Galgorm, sorry.
Yeah. Parkland. I haven't played it, but yeah, I heard very good reports about it being a very high quality parkland. And any photos I've seen is
Well, he won there back in 2018, beating Stuart Manley, and he also beat Victor Perez, who was fourth. So, and Will Bezeling, some decent names there. So, I'm wondering if this Callum Hill can hit the ground running. 125-1. I won't die thinking about that. I'll have a couple of quid on him.
Could be a good shout, Steve.
He's clearly a good player. Right, 3M Open over in the United States. We're talking Minnesota, so the very, very north in Blaine. It's 3M's home city, and they used to play the 3M Championship here year in, year out on the PGA Champions Tour. They then invested a lot of dollars and $16 million to get per year to get it on the PGA Tour. So they played this last year, the 3M Open, and it was a great tournament. If you remember, it was the tournament where Matthew Wolf won by holding that monster. It wasn't a chip, was it? He was off the green but putted it, and it was like a 60-foot putt or 65-foot, and he won the tournament.
Yeah, I remember.
He won. You remember, well, yeah, I remember it painfully. I was on DeChambeau, who'd eagled the last, and you're sitting there going, this is going to be a playoff. So DeChambeau, Morikawa, Adam Hadwin, and Wolf were all over this tournament last year. And that's something I've looked at in terms of where these players have played well, and you know, we'll go into that in a short while. I have to say, the 3M Open last year was a better tournament in terms of depth than we're seeing this year. We've got Dustin Johnson at the top, Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka, second favourites at 14-1. DJ is attempting 11-1. Not often you see a price like that in a weak field like that for DJ, but maybe that tells you something about this. So I remember a couple of weeks ago they played the Rocket Mortgage, and you had DeChambeau at 10-1. You had Webb Simpson at 12-1 and Hatton at 16-1, and all three of them played really well that week. Clearly, DeChambeau won. I think Simpson and Hatton were both top 10. I think Hatton was fourth or something. But I look at the top of the market this week, Johnson, Finau, Koepka and Fleetwood, and there's question marks about all four of those, big question marks, especially about Koepka, who's now revealed that his knee's not really healed properly since its surgery. But then once we go below those guys, we've got Wolf, the defending champion, Paul Casey, Russell Henley, Harris English, Glover, Watson, Eric Van Ruin, Sam Burns. It dies very, very quickly, the depth of this field. And it'll be an interesting to pluck out some of these lesser-known players that are going to be contending this week. TPC Twin Cities, it has been lengthened. It's a par 71. It's 7,468 yards. It's bent grass, pure bent grass greens. The only course this year we've seen on the PGA Tour with pure bent grass, Colonial. And actually, you think Colonial, DeChambeau was, I think he was top six there a couple of weeks ago, and also Colin Morikawa, who finished second here last year, was second in a playoff this year, wasn't he, behind Daniel Berger. So you kind of see these similarities when you look at leaderboards. It's wide off the tee. It's actually wider this week than Muirfield Village, and Muirfield Village is particularly wide. 30 yards at 325 yards off the tee here on average, the widths. That compares to 24 yards last week at Muirfield Village. So they're wide, wide fairways. It's also played at a kind of altitude. I'm seeing it's at 900 feet. Now, that isn't... You couldn't classify this as an altitude golf course, but 900 feet above sea level, the ball does travel 2, 3% further, maybe even 4. So that's something to bear in mind. So what I'm effectively saying is that a 7,468 yard par 71 does not play anywhere near that length here. You're looking at something around about the 7,250 mark. So actually, it's gettable to all. Clearly, we've only had one renewal, but one thing you do see from last year, when you look at Morikawa, Wolf and DeChambeau, strokes gained off the tee, they averaged 13th between the three of them. Approach was third, around the green 40th. If you're scrambling here, you're in trouble because effectively the greens are massive. Strokes gained tee to green 6th, strokes gained putting 32nd. So 32nd was the average out of those three performances. Tee to green was 6th and strokes gained approach was 3rd. So really, strong drivers, guys with great irons right now, and guys that can make loads of birdies. That's my summary here. It was also a golf course that I watched a lot of last year, and I know this sounds crazy because we're in the north of America in Minnesota, but it had a lot of Florida golf course connotations to me. Pretty big greens and lots of water everywhere. Water in play off the tee, water in play around the greens. I don't know if you remember that 18th, but I remember DeChambeau eagling that and he's basically gone full leather out the rough. I think it was like a 3-wood and he's landed it to about 10 feet over like over about 180 yards of water to the green. So I'm also looking, if I can get them, for players that have got some kind of record in Florida. Some guys that play well on Florida golf courses, that feel, the amount of water that's in play. Also, Florida golf courses renowned for their wind, open courses with wind crossing the golf course. Last year, you can check this out in my preview, of course, wasn't a lot of wind. We're talking 6 to 12 miles an hour across the full week. And that just about took the real edge off the scoring. Wolf won at 21 under. I think DeChambeau and Morikawa made it to 20s. And then there was a drop. I think it was 18s for Hadwin. But I'm seeing, and I'm looking at Windfinder right now. I'm going to press Control and F5. Just refresh it. Give it the full beans here. I'm seeing Friday this week up to gusting up to 25 miles an hour on Friday here. And on Saturday, I'm seeing it gusting up to 25 miles an hour for the early starters. And even in the afternoon, it's still going to be gusting up to 20 miles an hour. Now, I'm not suggesting this is going to be like an Open Championship or a Memorial on Sunday that we saw. But that, to me, when that's gusting and inconsistent between 15 to 20 miles an hour, that plays on players' minds in terms of shot selection, in terms of clubs to use, and also it affects putting, doesn't it? Because a lot of players don't like putting in gusty conditions. So that's something I've borne in mind this week, and we're quite fortunate because we've got the wind variable within our predictor model, Paul.
Yeah.
And that basically collects windy rounds across the last 5 years, and we can collate who's done best in wind-type conditions. And I've used that quite a lot this week because I actually think for, yes, you can see 61s here on Thursday. You can see 61, 62s for a couple on Sunday. But I'm kind of fancying that 68, 67, 68 is a decent score across Friday and Saturday here, where that could be kind of the best score of the day because, you know, when it's gusting up to 20 miles an hour, that's a problem for a lot of players this week. So one of the things I did look at was wind-positive players. And I know a lot of listeners don't use our predictor model. It's completely free of charge. You can come across the Golf Betting System and use it. I'll just take you through the top 10 on the wind predictor model, yeah? Dustin Johnson at 1. None of you two won't be surprised by that. 2, Charlie Hoffman. 3, Russell Henley. 4, Luke List. 5, Charles Howe. 6, Griot. 7, Knox. 8, Koepka. 9, Pat Perez. Pat Perez likes birdies, doesn't he? He's also tied with Ryan Moore. Then we've got the likes of Scott Piercy, Harris English, Siwoo Kim, who you mentioned earlier, Paul. Tony Finau. They're the top 14 of the wind stats on our wind variable on the predictor model. So I just thought that I'd throw that in the mix. For me, 36 holes of this is going to be a lot tougher than the other 36 holes. And you don't really want a player that can't handle wind, a bit like Adam Hadwin, who'd be blown totally off the course when it's blowing hard. So just one for mental note. Not a lot of value. I tend to get carried away at these tournaments, it has to be said. I tend to go in with, I'm not going to really spend a lot of my stake this week and end up, it's almost like a kid in a sweet store. A few that I did like but haven't tipped up. I think Sam Burns is likely to go very, very well. I think Burns was 50-1 yesterday. Didn't he go out in the final group at Workday a couple of weeks ago at Muirfield Village? I remember when he hit the scene, he did really well in those tournaments at Bay Hill and also PGA National in Florida. So there's lots to like about Burns. I didn't choose him, so don't fall into that trap, ladies and gentlemen. Another player I do like the look of at a bigger price would be Tom Lewis. Now, I know that he's European Tour, Paul. You know him far more about him than I do. But one thing I've always learned from you and what you said about Lewis, wide fairways and a lower scoring event, bent grass,
right in his
wheelhouse.
Think Portugal Masters and you're pretty much on the money.
Now, I think he was top 12 in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, which was by far his best showing on the PGA Tour. And I think he'll take something from that. He's way outside the 125 on the FedEx Cup. I think this week is a big opportunity for Tom Lewis. I don't think he'll have any links. I'm just checking as I'm mumbling here. No, he's in the US Open. He's not in the WGC next week. So you might find Lewis this week. And you might find he has to play the Barracuda Championship next week. Those could be two to keep an eye on, Tom Lewis. I was quite smitten on Tom, but he didn't make it. I went for the following. At shorter prices, I've gone for Russell Henley, who we know loves Florida golf courses. Tee to green at the moment is fantastic. 33-1 isn't the best price in the world. But the last time he won, 2017 in Houston, he was a 40-1 shot in another one of these tournaments that was kind of a smattering of quality at the top and not much under that. So Henley, 1.5 points each way at 33-1. I got with William Hill 8 places yesterday. If you find a better ball striker at the moment than Russell Henley, you're doing very, very well. The other one that we've mentioned so, so much since the PGA Tour season started last September is Harris English. I'm not prepared to get off the English train either. Just playing some really outstanding golf. And he was in the top 13 last week at Muirfield Village. Interestingly enough, we were sitting and watching it last week, Barry, when a lot of those players were getting blown off the course, Harris English shot a nice level par 72. And that, to me, says everything about Harris. He's steady, good off the tee right now. I think he was top 15 last week, strokes gained off the tee, which tends to be English's weakness. So if he's hitting the ball well off the tee, we know that his approach play is fantastic and he's a great wind player. English is decent in the wind. Par 71, I don't mind that with English either. I think he's a good shout this week. I've got 35-1 on English. Are there anyone, I know that you guys don't fancy the top of the market when we come to a lot of these tournaments. Is there anyone in that kind of price range that you want to just highlight before I move on? Sub 40s?
Not that low, no.
The only player that caught my eye, but made me think was whether Matthew Wolff would do well defending. And I see he's been backed in quite a lot. And clearly, he had a decent performance a few weeks back, didn't he? Finished runner up.
He played well last week, didn't he, Wolff?
Close to 10 to me, but like Barry, I've not taken anyone in that kind of bracket this week.
The only thing that put me off Wolff slightly was he shot 4-under on Friday at Memorial. He was quite a way up there, and then all of a sudden the wind blew, and he was 76 on the 76 on Sunday. Now I'm not suggesting that Memorial in windy conditions is going to be anything like this, but we'll find out how good a wind player is. It is going to be warm. It isn't going to be kind of chilling, cutting wind. But I still say anything gusting 20 plus is going to sort a few players out this week. And at Wolff, it could, 25-1, not sure. I want to ask you two about a player, and I want to ask this for our listeners' sake, because we get a lot and lot of listeners here from the United States. You two watch a lot of European Tour golf. You have done for many, many years. Talk to me strengths and weaknesses about Erik van Rooyen.
Because he is
hugely popular this week, mainly on the basis he's playing quite well, and also he had a Minnesota education, so he's clearly very popular at this part, and I'm sure that he's played the golf course quite a lot.
Yeah.
What do you two guys make of Erik van Rooyen?
He has been backed in quite heavily, isn't he? It's just a sea of blue that I'm looking at. I don't know. I got to the point with van Rooyen on the European Tour where I couldn't really contemplate backing him because he was so short relative to his ability to convert. I don't think his ability as a golfer is in any doubt. There's not a part of his game that I'd say is his weakness. He's long off the tee when he plays well. He's accurate when he plays well. He hits lots of greens. He's a very good putter when he's playing well. But you don't necessarily get all of those aspects in the same week. And he was one of those players who was, you'd class him as a perennial bridesmaid, I guess, on the European Tour. And until he eventually got over the line in Sweden, wasn't it? The Scandinavian invitation. You talk about Detry, you talk about these players who, once they get over the line, you expect them to push on. And perhaps that with van Rooyen will ultimately be the springboard that sees him push on to bigger and better things. I mean, he has played well this year, hasn't he? Finished third at the WGC
Mexico.
You can't knock that. I don't think that's a very good performance. And we saw him back at the Open Championship a couple of years ago at Carnoustie, I think it was, wasn't he? He was in a decent position up until the final round and kind of drifted away a bit. For me, I guess it's at the prices being pushed this week, well, there's still a little bit of 40-1, but generally he's going to go off at a circa 33s by judging where his market or where his price is going at the moment. He just doesn't win for me enough to justify backing him at that price. One European Tour win. I think he only won once on the Sunshine Tour prior to that as well, which for a player who has got every element to his game that Van Ruin has, he should be converting more. For me, if you to put it in a nutshell, I think the problem is probably more between the years with Eric than it is with his game, because I think he's actually got an awful lot of game. But he may develop and grow, and he may mature.
How many times have I said to you guys, wouldn't it be great to have a strokes gained between the ears? Strokes gained between the ears, top five. Well, anything to add to that, Barry, about Eric? I know you've been impressed with him in the past.
Yeah, no, super player. And I kind of tend to associate his really good performances with, you know, that kind of Lynxy style or firm and fast golf courses. He tends to perform quite well on them. A lot of good performances in the Middle East. Seen him pop up in the Irish Open. So, that's kind of where I have him pegged. Although the Scandinavian Invitational was Parkland, that? Wasn't it?
Was it Parkland? It was Parkland. Yeah. Okay.
So that kind of throws my initial theory out the window. Look, he's a super player, has skills and really good skills in all the departments. Mm. And I think it is that strokes gain between the ears that is the thing. He does have that. He has, you know, you see that kind of mental, susceptibility to the pressure, getting to his game when he's been in those situations. And he really, for his talent levels, really ought to have won more than he has. Maybe one, maybe two more. But, super player to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes this week. I mean, he's kind of got that inherent pressure already applied because he's going back to somewhere he's expected to go well. Mm. So
we haven't seen him, in the heat of a battle on a Sunday on the PGA Tour yet, have we, Eric? So it'll be interesting to see if he can get into that position, how he actually gets on with it. So thanks for that. I think especially the American listeners will appreciate that. 66-1 shot next for me. I took Will Gordon. Now, some of you might be aware of Will. He was the guy that finished like an absolute train and had a great tournament full stop at the Travelers a couple of weeks ago. Finished in third spot. And that was absolutely loaded, the Travelers, that week. It was packed. Far, far stronger than this. He has qualified now for special temporary membership of the PGA Tour on the back of sponsors' invitations. And we haven't seen that many times, have we? I can always remember Jordan Spieth in 2013 doing that. So this guy is clearly a prestigious talent. Last year, of course, we had a scenario where we had Hovland, we had Morikawa, and we also had Wolf doing exactly the same, playing off sponsors' exemptions and all grabbing cards. So, it's something we're seeing more and more of, and Gordon's done it now. 10th at Sea Island, 21st at Torrey Pines, 20th at Puerto Rico, 3rd at TPC River Highlands at the Travelers. He shot a second round 62. He led the field that week for birdies with 27. And I see, when I look at his amateur record, you can look at the full detail. We haven't got time. Full detail on my preview, which is available, of course, at Golf Betting System. Also, I'll put a link in the description box. He's got a lot of links to both Wolf and to Morikawa just on tournaments that he played as an amateur in California, also upstate in America in Rhode Island. There's also an absolute beauty. He won the Tavistock Intercollegiate Invitational in 2018, which is played at Isleworth Golf and Country Club in Orlando, Florida. That is a Palmer golf course. This is an Arnold Palmer original design this week. That is an Arnold Palmer design. And that golf course has also seen Colin Morikawa go really well. So there's a lot of link between Gordon and Morikawa this week. The other thing about Gordon, got a lot of length off the tee, and I don't mind that this week. Someone that can hit the ball a long way. We'll find out if he can play in the wind, though. That's one of these things that we'll certainly find out this week if the weather forecast holds. And then two at bigger prices. Charlie Hoffman. I'm following the bear this week, chaps. Charlie Hoffman. He's just starting to play nice golf. Four-time winner on the PGA Tour. Two of those wins have come on Arnold Palmer designs. throw some wind in the mix, throw a course that might be so, there might be some wind, some rain Tuesday afternoon on the golf course. They're going to be watering these greens. They just will. It's the PGA Tour. These greens with wind in the forecast are going to be as soft as they can be. I think Hoffman could go really well this week. He shot 68, 68, 67 his last three rounds at Muirfield Village. That boosted him up to a backdoor seventh. He was also 12th after 54 holes at TPC River Islands at the Travellers and fell away. And one thing we know with Charlie, he has to keep banging his head against the wall. He'll fall away, and eventually he'll stick in a contending position. I think it could be this week with Hoffman. 80-1 with William Hill, 8 places. And finally, I said about Florida golf courses. I said about players with a good bit of oomph off the tee. I remember last year, a lot of people were on Wyndham Clark, who bangs it an absolute country mile and can actually putt a little bit. I think Keith Mitchell is the same kind of player. And if we know one thing about Keith Mitchell, yes, he's better on Bermuda grass. But actually, give him a golf course that looks like a Florida golf course and give him a golf course he can attack with his prestigious length off the tee. We know he's a great putter, and that's still the case. He's been putting very well recently. I think Mitchell, 125-1 shot. I've got 8 places again with William Hill. I think he could go very, very nicely this week. He won the 2019 Honda Classic at PGA National, which has to be the toughest Florida golf course there is. And also 5th and 6th at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which clearly is Arnold Palmer's masterpiece in Orlando, Florida. He's also got some decent form upstate when you look at his Corn Ferry promotion year. 6th in Ohio. He was also 6th at the Canterbury Golf Club, which is Beechwood, Ohio. And that golf course was the course that the DAP Championship, which where Bryson DeChambeau won his Corn Ferry title, which, of course, he almost won here last year. So I think there's a good narrative this week with Keith Mitchell at 125-1. So I've gone for Mitchell. I'm following the bear with Charlie Hoffman, Will Gordon. I've got Harris English and Russell Henley. Who are you guys going at juicy prices?
I picked, you were talking about Tom Lewis earlier, so he's made my bet list, not my castaway list. I've also backed Troy Merritt, who missed the cut last week, but has been playing some very nice stuff recently, and coupled with a 7th at this event last year, I got him at something like 70-1, so happy with that. And my old friend Seamus Power is back in the field this week, and had some good fun with him there a few weeks ago. So
how's he been whacked on price from 600-1?
Quite heavily, unfortunately. Yeah, he's down to 200-1, which is not great. So, but
not
listen,
bad though, is it?
No, he's still take it. So I've just 200-1 yeah, it'd be okay. Like. It wouldn't be bad. Yeah, it wouldn't be bad. So I've gone with the first round leader and the outright combo on Seamus, and also have added Charlie Hoffman first round leader because of Charlie Hoffman's propensity for first round leader hot stuff.
You know what that means, don't you? Charlie Hoffman first round leader, and then he's going to finish tie for 9th on Sunday.
Yep.
You can see that coming a mile off.
Oh, it's written in the stars. Yeah,
you're going to have to ban me, Barry, from backing him first round leader this week, and really screwing that bet. That's funny. I like that. Yeah, I like those guys. I like those guys a lot. What about you, Paul?
I'm on Troy Merritt as well, Barry. So we're either going to be happy
sink
or
swim together.
Sad together, yes. I think there's a lot to like with Troy. I think this will suit him much more than it did last week. With the conditions last week, as you said, his 22nd week before at the work day, and then 8th week before at the Rocket Mortgage. So some decent stuff there. First all round performance he was that week at the Rocket Mortgage. So lots to like, given the fact that he was 7th here in Detroit last year.
He grew up in the Midwest in Iowa, so he fits the bill. And yeah, like you said, top 7 last. Ooh. last year here, wasn't he? And I had a bet with him a few weeks ago, and he was there or thereabouts. He's been playing some nice golf. Yeah. Golf merit. Yeah. Get that.
I know you wouldn't be able to resist Seamus Power. The other one that caught my eye was Derek Ernst, who's been playing some nice stuff on the Corn Ferry, 250-1. The other one I've backed, though, is Ryan Armour, who I was on a couple of weeks
Your
back.
Old mucker.
Yeah, I mean, this is from the strength, really, of the fact that you were saying that the ball strikers tended to come to the fore a couple of years, or last year, and I think that's exactly where his game is. Sixth at the Travellers, fourth at the Rocket Mortgage, 90-1. At the moment, but been putting very nicely as well over those two events, which is a bit of a revelation for Ryan Armour. He opened with a 66 here last year, was ninth after the first day before drifting away to 42nd, but I'll take a chance on Ryan at 90-1. And of course, Matt Every's in the field, so I've got to have a first round leader punt on Matt this week.
So you're not going first round leader on the bear?
I haven't done yet, but I will. I think is the answer to that. I do like Hoffman first round leader generally, yes, but I can't get away from Every. So prepare for him to shoot either 62 or 82. One of the other this week.
Peter Uihlein caught my eye as well before we disappear. His record in Ohio, which is a Midwest state, ninth at the Children's Hospitals and first. That's played at Ohio State Golf Club, which is, you actually look at the golf courses they play on the Corn Ferry. That is the most classical, toughest golf course they play. And he's also fifth at the Memorial in 2018. He's playing some decent stuff when he gets the chance to play on the main tour, Peter Uihlein. And we've said, bang. I know this is a big, big ask, but he played really well in Paris one year at Le Golf National. So all of the water and that kind of Florida, I get the feeling he might go well this week, Peter Uihlein.
Yeah, never quite know. He's quite an erratic player. He can be awful off the tee, can't he? Or he can find his long game and he's a very, very good putter when he gets his...
He is a good putter, absolutely. If he could actually link it all together this week, I know it's a big if. I think Uihlein could pop up on a leaderboard.
And again, he's another one who you'd consider for a first round lead, because when he can find that long game for even 18 holes, he can be quite devastating with a putter and make a lot of birdies.
Absolutely.
Options.
Right, that's us. We're done. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. I wish, as ever, you good luck on your bets this week.
Yeah, good luck, everyone.
Yep, good luck, everyone.
Good luck.
Let's get some wins in.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It would be nice. Good luck to listeners. And as I say at the top of the show, if you could leave us a review, if you made it this far, that is the least you can do, I think. Leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. We'll be back. We're packed next week, aren't we? We've got... What's the event in England next week, Paul?
They've renamed it. It's the Hero Open. So Forest of Arden, I think it is next week.
Forest of Arden. We've got the Barracuda Alternate PGA Tour event. And we've also got the World Golf Championship at St Jude Invitational. Three tournaments next week. It's going to be busy. We look forward to talking to you then. Goodbye.